This episode is brought to you by Odmo's Pizza in Cambie. Handmade awesome pizza plus craft beer, wine, and cider. Delivered. Call them today at 503-263-8444.
Welcome to Now Hear This, Cambie,
your source for news.
The threat of a possible teacher strike was avoided this week.
There's a new irresistibly cute creature winning over fans, and its name is Scootaloo.
Sports?
It's like Lucy in the football. You want to kick a field goal, but they take it away from you.
We had to learn how to win.
Goal can't be in the last second of the game!
And interesting conversations.
Because I'm one of the strongest girls ever, and I know that for a fact.
I just really enjoy writing gossip as if I was a bear.
With an old maid daughter that make the best moonshine in the coast.
If it would have hit me in the face, I think I would have died. I really do.
I guarantee you would have died, man. Are you kidding me?
The Cambie Fire Chief is sounding the alarm about an extreme shortage in hospital capacity and staffing for the local and regional healthcare systems, which is hampering his agency's ability to provide emergency medical service and save lives amid a Delta-fueled resurgence of COVID-19. Chief Jim Davis told the Cambie City Council Wednesday that local hospitals are already strained due to workforce shortages, particularly of nursing staff, and hospitals' failure to expand emergency room and intensive care capacity to keep pace with the population growth in recent years. But with nearly 1,200 Oregonians hospitalized for COVID-19, 309 of them in intensive care, that same underprepared hospital system has been pushed to the brink of collapse. It's something Cambie firefighter, EMTs, and even Davis himself are seeing firsthand every day. I personally transported a patient from a car accident to the emergency department and had to wait 50 minutes with the patient in the foyer, Davis said. The person who suffers is the patient. With intensive care units overloaded, hospitals are faced with the prospect of placing seriously ill COVID patients in the emergency department, which means even fewer available beds for ambulances. The ICUs are filled up, and they're running out of staff, Davis said. They're running out of ventilators, and COVID patients will have to eventually take beds in the emergency rooms. That means that there will be much longer waits for day-to-day emergencies and serious emergencies. Davis encouraged people to get vaccinated to protect themselves, their loved ones, and their community from the highly contagious Delta variant. All we ask is please do the research on the vaccine, said Davis, who served in the United States Air Force. As a veteran, I do respect the right to decide for themselves. This can be a problem that all of us in Cambie and the area can unite on to figure out. But we must figure this out because the hospitals are full. Davis and then Police Chief Brett Smith were the first people in Cambie known to have received the Moderna COVID vaccine in early January, shortly after it was made available to first responders. The chiefs received their shots at district headquarters along with close to 50 Cambie fire and police personnel. 2 weeks from my second vaccine, it was a relief to me and my family so that we could respond out and feel like we had some protection against the coronavirus, Davis said Wednesday. Joshua Williams, chief of the neighboring Aurora Fire District, announced his opposition to the statewide mandate requiring EMTs to get vaccinated and said the board of directors for the district must support his stance or terminate him. Davis on Wednesday said simply that Cambie Fire would abide by the mandate. Cambie school administrators warned community members to expect periodic disruptions this year, as students and staff would sometimes be pulled from the classroom due to quarantine protocols required by the state and county. But they may not have expected it quite this quickly. 1 week into 2021-2022 school year, 10 students and 2 employees have tested positive for the virus. while other 52 students, slightly more than 1% of the district's student population, have been required to quarantine along with 4 staff members. Positive cases have been identified at Canby High School, Lee Elementary, Trost Elementary, and Knight Elementary. District officials said at a school board meeting this month that quarantine protocols would be determined on a case-by-case basis at the discretion of Clackamas County Public Health. If a student misses school due to quarantine, they will need to work with their teacher and sometimes the principal to stay connected to their learning, Superintendent Aaron Downs explained during an August 23rd work session. We know some of our classes last year had some really robust online resources that students were able to access, and we're going to work hard with our teachers to consummate professionals to keep kids as connected to their learning as we can. Down said the district would also offer support to students and families during quarantine if needed. The incubation period for COVID-19, which means the length of time between a person is exposed and they develop symptoms or test positive for infection, ranges anywhere from 2 to 14 days, but it's typically around 5 days. This suggests those students and staff who tested positive this week have been unknowingly infected before school began. COVID-19 is widely circulating in most parts of the state and county, fueled by the more contagious Delta variant. District officials could not be reached Friday for comment. Canby City Councilor Jordan Tibbles announced his resignation Wednesday night, barely 9 months into his first term in office. Tibbles, an agricultural commodities trader and father of 2 young children, said he made the decision with great difficulty. "My family and I will be moving out of state and will unfortunately no longer be able to call Canby our home," Tibbles said, reading a prepared statement. "It has been a great honor to represent the people of Canby, and I'm truly thankful to the people who have supported me and entrusted me to represent them." Tibbles, who has been at times outspoken against business shutdowns, masks, and vaccine mandates, and other statewide efforts to curb the spread of COVID-19, also alluded to these larger issues and their potential conflict with the concepts of personal freedoms and autonomy. "We're living in a time with a lot of uncertainty," he said. "The concerns surrounding the pandemic and personal health choices, vaccination being forced by the state or face termination, segregation or denial of goods and services are unsettling. No matter where you fall on the side of the argument, I hope that we can all agree a healthy skepticism of government overreach is healthy for our society. Our founders knew this, and they created the Constitution to protect us from tyrannical government. They knew nothing was more dangerous and a greater threat to liberty than big government." Tibbles, a Marine veteran himself, had begun his remarks by reading the names of the 13 U.S. service members struck down in a terrorist act by the Islamic State outside the Hamid Karzai International Airport in Kabul, Afghanistan, on August 26th. He concluded by quoting Benjamin Franklin and John 3:16 and offering a sort of impromptu sermon drawn from his Christian faith. "God's Son died on the cross for our sins, in our place, and was resurrected from the grave 3 days later," Tibbles said. "He conquered death to show us that we can experience life in eternity with Him, should we choose to repent and follow Jesus. That is the gospel. That is the good news. And that is my final word as Canby City Councilor." His colleagues praised him for the work he accomplished in his brief time on the council, including a free debris removal and firewood giveaway he organized and led in the wake of the destructive February ice storms. "I think you challenged and stretched many of us with our perspective and with where you stood on things, and I really do appreciate that," said Mayor Brian Hodson. "I really do wish you and your family the best in the future and hope that you won't become a Dallas Cowboys fan." "Never," Tibbles said with a laugh. "Wouldn't do it." Tibbles' resignation is expected to shift the balance of power in favor of the council's progressive bloc for the first time in years, with Councilors Sarah Spoon, Chris Bangs, and Greg Parker poised to have a majority vote in appointing his replacement. The development may also shed on recall efforts against Spoon and Bangs that emerged earlier last week, both purportedly over statements and behavior that occurred months ago. If petitioners were able to remove both officials, then their replacements would be chosen by a council that is likely to be split 2-2, with Hodson casting the tie-breaking vote. Clackamas fire crews saved two buildings and a flock of sheep after a brush fire broke out in Beaver Creek Thursday afternoon. The Clackamas Fire District received a report of a brush fire in the 2400 block of South Ridge Road at approximately 1:30 p.m. Crews arrived to find 2 to 3 acres of grass burning, with two buildings being threatened, one of which contained livestock. Firefighters were able to divide and quickly control the rapidly spreading blaze, which grew into almost 4 acres at its peak. All sheep were saved, along with both buildings. Clack Fire officials said the fire originated in the outside burn pit. The resident had lit some unwanted paper debris and left the fire unattended. Clackamas Fire reminds that the area is experiencing unseasonably high temperatures, low humidity, and increasing winds. Clackamas County is currently under a red flag warning and complete burn ban, with only approval fire pits and ceremonial or warming fires allowed. Please use extreme caution when any type of burning is underway. Keep a water source nearby and never leave fires unattended. For more information about burning in the Canby Fire District, call the Daily Burn Info Line at 503-266-1195 or visit canbyfire.org/burn-information. Now Hear This Sports is brought to you by Rife and Hunsaker PC. When you need an attorney, turn to the firm Canby has trusted for over 50 years. Call them today at 503-266-3456. The Canby Cougars football team roared back into action after the shortest offseason in league history this summer and made a promising start to a campaign on which expectations are higher than they've been in years, defeating a tough top 10 opponent in the Dallas Dragons on the road 26-20. Two veteran senior leaders, quarterback Mikey Gibson and wide receiver defensive back Matthew Soles, helped pave the way to victory, along with super sophomore running back Tyler Konold, a newcomer to the varsity team after a dominating romp through the freshman league in the spring. Soles scored a touchdown and had 2 interceptions in the first half. Colby Keisler returned an interception more than 90 yards for a touchdown, and Konold took 2 trips to the end zone, including a 54-yard run to power the Cougars to the victory over the hosts' Dragons. It was the first time the Cougars had won their season opener since 2017 campaign, though take that with a grain of salt. They went 1-7 the remainder of the year in a brutally competitive Three Rivers League. This time, however, Canby boasts the number 5 team in 5A per scorebook live. Gibson finished 7-15 for 82 yards with 2 touchdowns and an interception. Konold had a combined 101 yards rushing and receiving with 2 touchdowns. For Gibson, a senior and third-year starter, it marked his return to the field after missing 2 games of the 2020 campaign due to injury. Being back under the lights, fans in the stands, and having that exciting environment again was incredible, Gibson said. It was an amazing feeling, and I'm so proud of this team for going out there and putting on a great show to get our first win. Canby returns to Cougar Stadium for their home opener Friday, a marquee matchup against West Albany, one of the best teams in 5A. Bulldogs are fresh off an impressive 21-17 win over a 6A powerhouse, Beaverton. The Cougars and Bulldogs face off on September 10th with the kickoff set for 7 p.m. In volleyball action, the Cougars dropped both of their opening week matches, falling to Liberty in the Southridge tournament Saturday and being overmatched by the Sheldon Irish at home Wednesday. Canby fell behind early in the first 2 sets, dropping the opener 25-11 and the second set 25-13. The Cougars were able to jump out to a quick 10-5 lead in the third, but the Irish battled back to take the frame 25-21 and the match. The Cougars had to retool this season after losing 2-time Three Rivers League Player of the Year, Daly McClellan, who departed for the University of Oregon after finishing her historic high school career last spring. Following her departure, Canby turns to youth. With only 3 seniors on the roster, the team looks to improve with each new week of experience. The young Cougs will begin the Three Rivers League play on Tuesday with a road tilt against Lake Oswego before hosting Tigard on Thursday. Catch the action at 6:30 p.m. Finally, soccer for boys fell to a tough McKay team in their 2021 season debut Thursday. The Scots jumped ahead early and never looked back, defeating the Cougars 1-4. The Scots jumped out to a quick 3-0 lead, dominating the possession. Camby's lone goal came late in the first half to close up the gap to 3-1. McKay followed this with a quick goal 5 minutes into the second half and ended up coasting for the rest of the game. Head coach Ryan McCormick's squad of Cougars is fielding a bevy of upperclassmen this season, 18 in total, and will try to get back in the swing of things after the strange 2020 season. The Cougs played in only 9 games last season during their abbreviated March campaign. This loss drops the Cougars' record to 0-1. Up next for Camby is a home match against Southridge on September 9th, with a kickoff time of 7 p.m. Over 70 years ago, a seed was planted in the rich, fertile soil of North Camby. The seed was Swan Island dahlias, and today it has blossomed and grown into the largest leading dahlia grower on planet Earth. Family-owned and operated, Swan Island is one of Oregon's premier agrotourism destinations, boasting 375 varieties and 40 acres of gorgeous blooms. A sea of color that is among the most jaw-dropping and unforgettable sights in the entire Pacific Northwest. While their fields and annual Dahlia Festival justifiably get a lot of attention, Swan Island has a lot of amenities you may not know about. Their selection of gifts, gardening supplies, and other unique finds is among the most expansive in Camby area, and their fresh-cut flower shop, it's always worth stopping for. This summer, Swan Island is featuring a rotating menu of delicious food trucks Thursday through Sunday and a wide variety of fun classes for all interests and ability levels. The Dahlia Farm will also be hosting a local farmers market every Friday and live music shows through September. Swan Island and their amazing dahlia fields are open 6 days a week, 9 a.m. to 5:30 p.m., closed Wednesdays. For class registration, concert schedule, or more information, visit dahlias.com or follow Swan Island Dahlias on Facebook and Instagram. Attention hunters! The Camby Rod and Gun Club will be opening their 100-yard rifle range to the general public and club members later this month to give hunters and sportsmen the opportunity to ensure their firearms are properly sighted in before the hunting season kicks off. This year's sight-in days will be from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. the last 2 weekends in September, the 18th, 19th, 25th, and 26th. The cost is $5 per gun and $1 per chamber flag, which is refundable upon return. The Camby Rod and Gun Club provides the range officers, targets, experienced spotters, and coaches at each firing point to help with the sighting-in process. The Camby Rod and Gun Club is located about a mile southeast of Camby on the Malala Forest Road. Maps and more information are available at cambyrodandgun.org. No reservation necessary. Happy hunting.
The past few weeks, many people, we've all been watching with disbelief and with horror and sadness the events that have transpired in Afghanistan, the terrorist attack, the lives that have been lost, the lives that have been destroyed, and just the sad state of affairs that has happened there from our country. Many people have been talking about it today on the Camby Conversation. Today, we're very honored and delighted to have someone who's from Camby and has had much involvement in some of the events over there and can tell us with a much more direct eye about things that we have just seen on TV. Chris Crum, how are you today? Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Tyler. I'm doing well. Thank you.
Awesome. So glad to talk to you today. Really honored to have some of your time. Can you please tell us, Chris, just tell us a little bit about what you do, kind of for folks who don't know you.
Sure. I'm a defense contractor, which means that I basically never got too far away from the military when I finished my time in uniform.
Right.
I did eight years in the Navy, 3 years in the Air Force, went contracting when everything started up in Iraq and Afghanistan. Then I was a government civilian for about 5 years in Italy for the Navy, and then been a contractor again for the last almost 8 years. So that's pretty much what I've known for about 30 years.
Yeah, and you really didn't get too far away, did you? Not too far from the military.
No, and it all started, you know, I was only 17. I was 10 days out of high school, graduating Cambie in 92.
Yeah.
And I guess I was just anxious to see the world and do something. Mm. So, what I do now is I support a military program that is coalition and communications. So whenever we want to work with, and my specialty is the maritime environment. So every time we want to work with the French, the Brits, the Aussies, Koreans, whomever, you know, we work with all of them. So it's a pretty fun and rewarding job most of the time.
We have a really incredible story to tell that relates directly to the initial crisis and evacuations in Afghanistan. I should say you have a story to tell. I have no involvement, of course. But it involves another person in Cambie, your friend Ken. Is it Peterson or Pedersen?
Peterson, yep.
Yeah. Can you tell us a little bit about him and your friendship growing up together?
Sure, yeah. Ken and I think we must have met in grade school. Grade school or middle school, you know, we both grew up in Cambie and took two different paths. He went to college. I was too anxious. And I enlisted. He went the officer track. He's been flying for the Air Force his entire career. And we got lucky a few years ago. We reunited when he got stationed down here at Special Operations Command, where I have an office too. And so that was pretty cool after so many years. And we hadn't really been in touch over those years, maybe, you know, loosely through Facebook or something. But yeah, so we reconnected and it's been great. His experiences are just amazing. So, you know, when I had do you want to go to the next story about Shakib?
Yeah, so let's set the stage for that. So one thing that for me, and I think for many people that have been, an additional heartbreak about this situation, I've talked to a number of Afghan war veterans, and it's you know, obviously there's the sense of hopelessness, the sense of futility, like what was this all for? Was it worth it, the sacrifice and all that? But there's also this heartbreaking element of we were over there and these Afghan civilians, so many of them were helping us, were supporting us, were translating for us, sometimes putting themselves in harm's way. They cut our hair. They cleaned up after us. They cooked for us, you know, and we just left them. You know, so many of them weren't able to help them, weren't able to get them out. And now their situation they're in is potentially even worse than it was before because they helped us. You and also contractors as well, not just service members, had that story. And that relates to the story you have to tell us, I understand.
Yeah, exactly. And you're right. I mean, the sacrifices that they make as individuals, but also as families, you know, so many of them, obviously they put their entire future and livelihood on the line to ally themselves with us, with Americans and our other coalition partners. I mean, so many other NATO countries have contributed a lot over there as well.
Yeah.
but yeah, they come out, they do the missions, you know, with our guys and you know, they bleed and cry and, you know, all that stuff together. And so some of the, you know, what we're seeing in the news is actually kind of inspiring to me to see so many of my brothers and sisters, you know, in arms, just going back as veterans and doing what they can to help these people who they've, you know, made a bond with over all these years. The first time that I went over there was January, 2004. That's when I met Shakib. And, we hit it off right away. You know, our team, I was part of a small group of people and it wasn't it was dangerous work. I was an intel guy, and he was out there with us, you know, interpreting for us with some really rough characters. And so, you know, we relied on him 100% for translation.
You could not have done these missions and these jobs without somebody to help communicate. Yeah.
Yeah. And imagine, you know, he was only a teenager at the time. So a teenager telling some crusty old warlord, you know, how it's going to be. That was pretty, those guys weren't very intimidated, but still he was, you know, scared. I'm sure he was, you know, really, really nervous, but his whole family is, you know, makes that commitment together. And so, so many people like that, but, yeah. And Ken has, I don't even know how much time he spent over there. So he knows people a lot more than I do. So that's why I'm really proud of him for helping so many different families who he doesn't know, you know, just get out with the work that he does, just helping to coordinate stuff, you know, out there. But, Yeah.
So, I mean, obviously, like, things just changed so fast in Afghanistan. I don't know even if people can remember what it was like last week or a couple of weeks ago when all this went down. But just you know, the our armed forces were pulling out. You know, very suddenly the Taliban had retaken control of the country and of the capital very quickly, and there was this mass chaotic evacuations that were happening. And you, Shakib was already stateside, right? But he had a number of family members and it's still in Afghanistan. Correct.
Yeah, Shakib and his brother earned their citizenship through military service with our U.S. Army, and you know, and everything that they did for us. But their families are still back there. In Shakib's case, he'd gotten married in the last couple of years and applied, you know, for the fiance visa and all the other things that are required. But, you know, like everything else with COVID, bureaucracy is already really slow with the immigration process. But COVID only slowed it down that much worse. And so, you know, she was stuck there and he was really concerned about her. We had reconnected a couple of weeks ago on LinkedIn. And then, you know, I called him after that and we had a long conversation just catching up. You know, it'd been a few years at least since we talked. So he told me about his wife and, you know, the rest of the family and everything, but he was really concerned about his wife. So I knew that Ken was somewhere over there and I wasn't sure what his job was, but I figured maybe he knows, you know, the situation on the ground. Obviously he knows the situation on the ground better than I would. And so, you know, maybe he knows somebody who is part of that embassy staff or something that, you know, might be able to help. You know, what are they doing for all these people that are there? There must be some kind of a plan. So yeah. I talked to him and he talked to some folks who had exfiltrated from the embassy to the military portion of the airport, which is, you know, where everybody's seeing everybody getting evacuated from. So yeah, they were still there. And, you know, those military men and women and the civilians and probably a few contractors too, like, can you imagine the daunting task of thousands of people rushing, you know, the airport and trying to get through? We didn't even have the 82nd there yet. You know, at that point they had gotten there, like, I think just before Shakib's family got out, but yeah, it was pretty crazy. So Shakib sent me all the documentation, you know, for his wife. And I forwarded that to Ken forwarded it to some people that he knew. And, you know, we just kind of took a life of its own. And at that time that team, that like task force like team at the airport, was they were doing everything they could to get civilians and families of citizens, American citizens and family members and their immediate family and all that kind of stuff out of the country. So she clearly had a case, pretty much she had everything she needed, so we got her through. What happened, the story in the paper talks about how basically in the middle of the night, you know, she had I think it was her brother or a nephew escort her to the airport. And she had to, you know, go by foot and, you know, avoid Taliban checkpoints and all that good stuff. And, Ken knew which gate to vector her towards. So he relayed that to me and pushed that information on. She made it through pretty easy, relatively easy, compared to everybody else. But then after she made it through, she keeps like, well, I got two brothers and two sisters. They've got spouses and kids, and her parents, his wife's, you know, his in-laws. Like, it's a long shot, but you know, let's see. Let me see what Ken says. So
yeah, it was like,
reach out to Ken. He's like,
20 hey, people. It was like 20 yeah, people.
Okay. 20 people. 20 people.
Yeah.
So he's like, well, let's give it a shot. You know, the same process basically. But I mean, you know, these old folks, they had to at like 4 a.m. just drop everything, and they put all their faith in Shakib and us to, you know, do right by them. And we did the best we could. I was really nervous. I was really scared it wasn't going to work out, and I was going to have that guilt on my shoulders. You know, I kept telling them, I'm like, we're hoping for the best. We're praying for the best, but yeah,
this was never certain, right? I mean, this was never like, this will go. Yeah.
Yeah. You just get there and you're okay. It's not that simple at all.
Yeah.
So yeah, elderly people, kids as young as 1 year old, you know, so you're carrying infants by foot. I mean, Kabul is a big city, and, you know, taking all these back roads to avoid checkpoints and patrols and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. And they finally make it.
I don't want to take my 1 year old to Costco. I mean, that's like a nightmare. So,
Can you imagine? Oh my gosh. Yeah. And, you know, I had some video, and I got to talk a little bit with, you know, one of his brothers, and you can hear all the babies in the background, because a lot of people had families they were trying to get out.
Right.
And, yeah. So they, you know, but they stuck together. They were, you know, resolute, and they pushed when they were told to push, you know, forward to get up there and everything. And I mean, I have pictures. I don't know if I sent them to you, but pictures of the Taliban up in their face, you know, pushing and shoving and threatening and all this. So they did everything except, you know, short of firing their weapons pretty much. And our 82nd, you know, airborne guys were, you know, they're doing their job, just holding the line. That's really what they were there for. So
yeah,
they weren't to intervene. And that was tough. It's kind of, I know it's tough for those guys.
Yeah.
You know, they're really young soldiers, and mostly, but they were exemplary. You know, every one of the service members out there, from everything that I've seen, you know, not just in the news, but, you know, through friends who were out there, you know, everybody who's out there, they're like, yeah, they're doing miracles. And so, you know, not eating and sleeping as much as, you know, they probably should, definitely not sleeping as much as they should. And
yeah,
probably eating on the run. So yeah, pretty amazing. But we got them out when they finally got through.
Incredible.
It was a lot of waiting around.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And God bless the Marines that they, you know, came out and got them at the last, you know, minute after we had all the documentation through, and some people inside had done some preliminary screening, you know, and before they were pushed away and back in harm's way to the Taliban, which would have been, that would have been a death sentence, I think.
Yeah.
You know, the Marines came out and grabbed them. So that's pretty awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was really stop and go, even once they got to the airport, as I understand it. I mean, there were a couple times they were told no and had to turn back, and then they were told, no, do go forward. Yeah.
Yeah. And honestly, and here's the cool thing about this family is that they all stuck together. Even if there was a point when, you know, one family has a child who was born, she's 6 years old, American citizen. She was born in Virginia when they were home on vacation, or back here on vacation at one point. So they could have gotten through easier than everybody else, but they refused to go without the rest of the family.
Yeah.
So that was pretty cool, you know, I thought. And I can't say that one American citizen, that one child was enough, but maybe, you know, maybe she was enough to pull the rest of the family through. Yeah. But, you know, yeah, I'm just thankful that they all made it through. They're still not even in the States. A lot of them are you know, still over there at one of the camps.
Okay.
Hi, I'm Megan Waterman. I'm the owner and operator of the Book Nook in Canby, Oregon.
And I'm Tyler Clausen of Now Hear This Canby, the show you're listening to. Megan, the Book Nook is one of my favorite places in all of Camby. It's a one-stop shop for gifts, board games, new books, used books, and books from local authors. Why did you decide to open it?
Well, I love the power of a story. I love how reading about different people and places, times, stretches my mind. It makes me see the world differently, whether that's a fantasy story or a biography. It all changes the lens that I see and how I interact with people. The reason that we added games to our store is for that same reason. It's just a different way to experience story through gameplay.
And along with new selection, you're at a new location, right?
We are. We just moved, technically just across the intersection to the old Parsons building. We've expanded our space and also our selection. So we've got more books, more gifts. We added a larger gaming section. And now with the world opening back up a little bit more, we're starting to relaunch some of our events. We have relaunched our general fiction and our fantasy book clubs, and those are going great. And we're about ready to kick off game nights, starting with our beginner Dungeons & Dragons camp, led by Camby's very own Tyler Clausen.
Hey, that's me! If you're interested in D&D, make sure you stop by the Book Nook and get more information about role-playing opportunities there.
Yeah, or stop by anytime and chat with one of our booksellers about their current book recommendations and let us help you find your next favorite read. We're now open on Sundays as well, so we're there 7 days a week.
Nice. The Book Nook is in downtown Camby or online at booknookcamby.com.
Joining us now is Donna Ellison of Ellison Team Homes, a firm serving all across the Portland metro area with three realtors based right here in Camby. Donna, can you tell us how Ellison Team Homes started?
I started in real estate. I grew up with my dad. He was a realtor. Mm-hmm. So I'm a second generation broker, and I grew up with him on weekends. And I learned a lot eventually working with him for several years and then going out on my own. Our family moved to Camby a couple of years ago, but we really didn't know how it was going to go. And within the first probably 3 months of being here, we literally fell head over heels in love with this place. We love the community, the spirit here. The first Christmas at Waite Park, I was literally crying because everybody was walking around saying Merry Christmas and people were drinking hot chocolate, and we got in a carriage ride with the horse, and it was just too much. You just realize it's special here. Real estate's always been my passion. It is my professional love. I enjoy the people, the relationships. So much comes out of kind of the intensity that you spend with people. You're really up in their business for a period of time. And sometimes it's a couple months. Sometimes it's a couple years, sometimes it's a lifetime.
Yeah.
I feel very blessed at this point to have people that have been with me for almost my entire career. Mm-hmm. Clients that have bought and sold maybe 2, 3, 4, or 5 homes. I have one client that's bought and sold 8 homes with me.
Yeah.
3 generations. It's a beautiful business. It makes for a very full life.
Mm-hmm. How can people find you?
How can they not, really? we have a website, www.ellisonteamhomes.com.
Well, thank you, Donna.
Thank you for having me.
So they do get screened. They get, you know, they do the best they can right there on the ground. Then they go to the next place out of country. They get them out of harm's way, and then they do a pretty decent screening. So, you know, they have picked up some Taliban or some people who were in, you know, a database of being rolled up previously and all that. And they filtered out. They've got really good biometrics over there. We've been there long enough, you know?
Yeah.
So they have done a pretty good job on screening, and then they go to the next stop. They get screened 3 or 4 times before they're just let loose on American soil. So,
yeah.
You know, you trust but verify when it comes to information in the news, you know, in the media. But I've been following this, you know, multiple times a day, you know, with Shakib and, you know, keeping
What's been his reaction? What have been your guys' conversations since this all went down?
Super thankful. I mean, gratitude can't even begin to express. He's just happy that they're all safe. And now he's a little bit anxious, I would say. Not frustrated, not upset at all. He's just anxious to be reunited with them.
Yeah.
I mean, the family, you know, they do provide some kind of a laundry service, but they literally have only the clothes that were on their backs 2 weeks ago. That's it. But he sent me some pictures. The food conditions got better after the initial, you know, they were like basically the first wave, you know, of folks coming through. But I think that our government has, you know, done their best. The military has done their best to step up and make conditions, you know, better for them. I think that's the military logistics right there. They've been phenomenal.
Yeah.
So, some of the family members are stateside, and when they get done with their final screening process, they'll be sent wherever they want to be in the States, which in their case is going to be the Washington, D.C. area.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Chris, that's an incredible story. Like, thank you so much for telling us about that. And to you and Ken and all the other American service members and people who help make this possible, like, thank you for going that extra step to help get these people out of harm's way who were in harm's way because they helped us, right? Because they were our allies. So thank you for that. I just want to hear in maybe our last few minutes a little bit more about how you personally feel, and maybe some of your friends and other folks that you know, family members who are family members or service members. But I just want to talk about, you know, kind of what we mentioned at the start of this show, some of those challenges and the difficulty of watching these scenes of what's transpired in Afghanistan.
Yeah, thank you for that. Well, mixed feelings. I think most of us, I won't speak for everyone else, but I think it's pretty safe to say that we've all got some mixed feelings about it. I personally did 3 short deployments over there as a contractor each time. So my living conditions were different than military.
Yeah.
Well, in Afghanistan, I slept in the same place as military, ate the same chow halls, all that kind of stuff. Iraq was a bit different, but, you know, we had all the resources we needed, but at the same time, so I remember my second deployment was 2005 or 2006. And I was already thinking when I was there, you know, they forgot about us. This is the forgotten war already at that point. So, you know, on one hand, I feel like, you know, I ask, was this all for nothing? But then I look at all these families like Shakib's family. And I think about, you know, how their lives would be if we hadn't have been there. We've got an entire generation of girls who've been educated now. And, you know, they had no opportunities before. At least there was 20 years where women and children and, you know, all these people coming up they know that there's so much more out there and they want to do so much. And they're super brave. I mean, the courage that they've got, they were out marching in the streets against the Taliban and knowing that they could be killed, and they're just fearless. And I think that, you know, I think it's worth it because we don't even know yet all the positive things that all of these thousands, hundreds of thousands of people, if not millions of people, are going to do for the world, you know, their kids and, you know, future generations. So I think it was worth it in the end. Obviously, you know, me personally, I would have done things differently along the way. I think a lot of us think that maybe we reached too far trying to, you know, influence a culture, change a country. There's a lot of special pet projects that happened over the years. You know, that's just the nasty side of politics, unfortunately, and money and all that. But as far as on a human level, you know, we have an entire generation that we provided hope and opportunity for. And that, I think that makes it worth it.
Wow. That's amazing. Thanks, Chris. Yeah, I just want to say to any veterans or family members that are listening that it's totally normal to be feeling feelings of anxiety, hopelessness, to just be anger, you know, about what we've watched in Afghanistan over the years or over the past few weeks. The Veterans Crisis Line is 1-800-273-8255. It's confidential. It's staffed mainly by veterans, but by people who are trained, who understand, who just want to talk, just want to hear what's going on. You know, so if you're feeling lonely or if you just want to talk, I encourage people to call that number. There's other resources at linesforlife.org if you know somebody in your life who might need some help. And I know one thing that I've heard a lot of veterans say and talk about is just check on people, right? Just reach out to your battle buddies. Just make sure that everybody's doing okay. Just be an ear. I imagine you would probably echo that.
Yeah, definitely. Yep. Be your brother's keeper. Be there for them. A lot of people haven't even had time to process, you know, their experiences, more recent experiences. Sometimes it takes years for things to come out, and it's confusing, and it's, you know, emotions are all over the place. Certain things are just, you know, put you in a dark place quick, but you got to just talk to somebody, be a friend,
and
listen, like you said. I want to make one last comment, if that's all right with you.
Of course.
Some of those service members who were killed in that explosion were directly involved in this Pineapple Express story that some people may have heard of, pulling families in, you know, through the crowd at that Abbey Gate out there. I mean, they are heroes. They saved so many lives before they gave theirs up. And they weren't just standing there holding the line. None of those guys were. This was, you know, the whole base was just doing their absolute best to get people through who they could get through. And of course you can't save everyone, but they did the best that they could. This GoFundMe that was started for Shaquib's family to help them get going, it's really taken off. It's over $20,000 right now. And I know that some of these donations, there's a whole lot of anonymous donations out there, but if you're watching or listening to this and you're one of those generous people, thank you so much. It's going to help so much, you know.
Thanks for mentioning that. We'll drop that link to the GoFundMe in the show notes and in the video notes. Chris, thank you so much for again for your service. Thank you for what you've done and what you tried to do over there, and thank you for your time today. Is there anything else that you'd like to share?
No, I really appreciate your time. One more plug for Ken. Ken, I want to say this is a fun one. Ken has also saved some dogs. He rescued seven dogs on a previous deployment over there.
Well, we should have been talking about that. People love dogs. We should have done the dog story.
That guy's got the biggest heart in the world. Yeah. And, you know, he's buddies with a guy who's a retired Royal Marine, you know, this British dude who ran a shelter. He got out of the military, went back, and was running the shelter. And that guy got a chartered plane in there, and they got all these dogs out. And a lot of people are, you know, some people are criticizing, saying, you know, well, animals over people, that plane never would have even been there. You know, it wasn't in the way or nothing. So I just want to say, you know, they got like 100 dogs out, I think, on that flight. That was pretty cool. And and Ken's one of those kind of guys too. You're like, you know, he goes out there and he ends up adopting a pet, you know, and that dog's with him the entire deployment. And then he comes back with like seven more. So it's pretty cool.
So what happened to the dogs? Do they go through a screening too? Make sure they're not Taliban allied or.
Yeah. You know, dogs get a free pass.
Okay.
You know, they all got checked out. They all got vaccinated and everything.
They look trustworthy. So cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, they're pretty good. Thanks again. It's been awesome talking to you today, and stay safe.
Thanks, Tyler. Appreciate it.
Hi, everyone. Donna Ellison. Hannah Ellison with Ellison Team Homes. We wanted to come and talk to you today because we're super excited. A couple of things we're doing this month. We are one of the sponsors for the Canby Rodeo. Can't wait to see the rodeo because we love that. And the fair and all the kids. We've missed it for so long. So come see us this week at Canby Rodeo. Get your giddy on. And then the other thing we want to talk to you about, which is kind of the biggest news all year in Canby, is that we're back to being able to do our Canby Big Night Out and our Weekend Out.
Gonna be amazing. We have live music,
all of the local businesses are showing up and supporting in any way they can, whether it's having food, having a tent. There's going to be so many activities for kids to do. Also, stuff for adults as well. There's going to be dancing. And we actually are going to have
a dunk tank. And we're super excited. Right, my goal, which I think I'm hitting it, is to have at least one kind of well-known person every hour that we can throw balls to knock that person in the dunk tank. I'm not going to drop any names because I'm not that kind of a girl, but I will tell you we're going to have some really fun people that you're probably going to want to throw some balls at. We're going to do that part of it as a fundraiser for Fido Animals. You probably already know we partner with them so that we can help coming into this time of the year. Big needs for animals, which is really seniors and veterans and people that are not able to buy food. So we're doing that portion as a fundraiser. We're going to have swag. Come see us. We're super excited. The rest of our team, we can't wait to see you. It's been a long time. We're going to be outside. Of course, we'll be taking all of the precautions to make everybody safe. So come hang out and have fun with us. There are some things we'll never understand.
Tyler, did you know that the Australian lyrebird can mimic any sound that it hears, even chainsaws?
No, that's super interesting.
Did you know that a baby puffin is called a puffling? Or no. That baby sea otters can't swim, so their moms wrap them up in pieces of kelp until they learn how to paddle?
Wait, do you know any trivia that isn't like animal related?
Not really, but here's some stuff you may not know about the Wild Hare Saloon, where Camby goes to eat and have fun.
Okay.
The Wild Hare is one of Camby's longest running locally owned restaurants. Owners Joan and Darren Moden have been in business for 16 years.
That's cool.
Yep. Heck, you were just a baby back then. And they love to give back. They've been members of the Camby Chamber for that long, and they donate over $20,000 to local sports, FFA programs, and civic organizations each year.
Wow, I'm legitimately like caught off. That's cool.
Yeah. They also support more than 30 jobs in the community through their award-winning staff, some of them as young as 18. Hey, that's older than you are.
Dude, I'm 10 months younger than you.
With the days getting longer and the weather getting warmer, the Camby Wild Hare's expansive outdoor patio is the place to be. Furry friends, welcome.
Well, that sounds great. I'm going to go check them out just off of Highway 99E next to the Space Age in Camby at 1656 Beaver Creek Road in Oregon City or on their website at thewildhairsaloon.net. Now Hear This Camby is produced by me, Tyler Clausen. Our content director and star reporter is Tyler Frankie. And of course, our show is edited by Cameron Clausen. We also feature the vocal talents of Joy Struby and James Walden. So a round of applause to them. The song that you're hearing right now is Canby by singer-songwriter Olivia Harms, used with her permission. To find more work from her, you can visit her website olivia13.com.
Now Hear This Camby is dedicated to preserving independent local journalism and redefining local news with our fun, fresh, and energetic brand of storytelling. Our sincere thanks to our local sponsors who make this show possible. Please show your appreciation by supporting the small businesses who support us.
The production of Now Hear This Studios, Camby's locally owned, full-service audio, video, and media production company. Our mission is to produce the best content in the universe. And we'd love to help you do it. Find us online at nhtstudios.com.
I will take a motion to adjourn.
I just moved it.
I didn't even ask for it, though.